And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about, 11:06 on a Saturday evening here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. My co-host, the very dimpled and blonde and very gorgeous Lisa Wolf, to my right.
I wasn't even sure who you were talking about. Is that me?
It is you.
Well, it's good to be here. I'm excited. It's a busy Saturday night here on Michigan Avenue.
Yes, indeed.
A lot of fun.
People are walking by like crazy here.
They're all waving
to
at
us.
Me.
They're waving to us.
Me.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. And we are going to play some really fun classic radio shows tonight, Lisa, because we have a salute to Gregory Peck, and we have three classic radio shows of suspense. Now, that was one of the best shows on the air. And Gregory Peck liked to appear on Suspense, and he's on three episodes on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, which is number 91 in the series, 91.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All righty.
This actor will reprise his role as the man who fights the zombie apocalypse in the action thriller World War Z 2.
World War Z 2.
Coming up.
The first one was really good, too.
I did not see it.
And what do our listeners win?
They will win a pair of tickets to see Chops, which is playing at the Theater Wit on Belmont in Chicago.
Chops. Yeah. All right. Okay, so sounds good. The number to call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner. We're going to play a clip. Let's play a clip from this actor here. You'll hear him in the scene from Inglourious Basterds.
That's German here wants to die for country. Oblige him.
All right, you know who that is? Call us, 312-981-7200. Find our winner, and we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's play that movie clip one more time. Or not.
Oblige him. Gosh, German here wants to die for country. Oblige him.
And we've got Mary on the line from Wonder Lake. Hi, Mary.
Oh, wait a second.
What?
Do we have? There she is.
Mary?
Are you there?
Mary?
Quite contrary.
Help us, Sean.
I'm here.
There you are.
There she is.
How you doing, Mary?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. We're glad that you called in and you're with us, and we're hoping you recognize that celebrity's voice.
I do.
All right. What is it?
Brad Pitt.
You are right, Mary. You are a winner. You've won a pair of tickets to see Chops. It's playing right now through August 14th at Theater Wit, which is on Belmont in Chicago, about three middle-aged jazz freaks who are charmed by a beautiful and mysterious woman. It's a Chicago premiere, and I hope you will love that. You can check them out at theaterwit.org.
You know what, Mary? You know,
what?
Brad has a very talented actor brother, too. His name is Arm. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Armpit. Yeah, you didn't know that?
I get it.
All right, there we go.
You don't have to laugh, Mary. I don't laugh either. So anyhow, Mary, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your listening to the show.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay,
take care.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host Lisa Wolf is next to me, and our producer tonight is Sean Davis. Sean the man Davis, he is in the booth there, and he's taking care of all the buttons, the bows, and the pedals, and the what else could he be?
Well, we just feel very well taken care of.
Yes,
indeed.
So
we are in good hands.
It's always good to see Sean. and he's going to hit all the right buttons for us tonight, hopefully.
Oh, he'll do it.
Yeah.
We're good.
You know what, Lisa?
What?
We have three classic radio shows starring Gregory Peck. It's a salute to Gregory Peck.
That makes sense.
And the first one is called The Lonely Road. It's from March 21st, 1946. You know, Suspense was a terrific mystery series. It was actually created by CBS as a potential radio vehicle for Alfred Hitchcock to produce, actually to direct. And he didn't end up directing any of them, right, other than they did a forecast show. They did sort of a pilot show.
Right.
And he was involved in that. But really in the series, which aired from 1942 through 1962, he never really was on the show. But all of the big stars appeared on Suspense, including Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart, Betty Davis, Orson Welles, on and on and on. And Gregory Peck appeared before the CBS microphones many times. And we have three episodes for you tonight. Let's start out with The Lonely Road. This is from March 21st, 1946. Here's a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Gregory Peck as star of The Lonely Road, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Gregory Peck in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Okay, Lieutenant. You can question him now.
Thanks, Doc. Well, hello, Gare. How goes it?
Oh, not bad. You want a statement, I suppose.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, tell me first, is she apt to get the extreme penalty?
Well, that'll depend a lot upon what you have to say.
I see. Well, I'll give it to you straight. I'm counting on you to do your best for her.
Sure, sure. Well, go ahead, shoot.
Okay. The first time I saw Jenny, she was coming along the road carrying a suitcase. I knew she was headed for our place because it's the only house for miles around there. I was trimming the hedge, and I'd got as far as the rear gate when she reached it. I waited for her to speak.
Is this the Gare place?
That's right. What can I do for you?
You had an ad in the paper for a girl to do general housework.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, come along into the house. My wife will want to have a talk with you.
This is a beautiful place you've got here, Mr. Gare. But it's certainly hard to get to.
You've walked from the highway?
Yeah. Must have been almost 5 miles. The sun is something fierce. I almost gave up. Don't any buses run along here?
No, we're pretty isolated. But when there's help in the house, I always manage to give them a lift into town.
That makes it nice, Mr. Gare.
What's your name?
Jenny.
Jenny what?
Jenny will do.
All right, Jenny. In here, please. And Mrs. Gare's a trifle hard of hearing, so you'll have to speak up a bit. Oh, Helen, this is Jenny. She's come in answer to our advertisement.
Oh, yes. I'm very glad to see you, Jenny. Won't you sit down?
She was extraordinarily looking. Not beautiful or pretty. Striking, I guess, would be the word. She had heavy black braids wound about her head. Her eyes were a clear green and looked straight through you. And she was lean and powerful, like a young animal, a leopard or a panther or something. Well, my wife engaged Jenny. That night she cooked an excellent dinner and served it well. She had on a purple skirt and a cerise, I guess you'd call it, blouse, and I could see Helen eye it with disfavor. Every time the girl came close to me, I could feel the strength of her. And those green eyes watched us as if she was sizing us up. We took our coffee and cigarettes out on the veranda after dinner. You can look right over the orange grove to the hills. It's nice.
Steve, what do you think about Jenny?
Oh, well, it's a little early to judge. Seems capable enough. That was a darn good dinner, if you ask me. Maybe we're in luck, darling.
Maybe. What is she, do you think? Mexican?
No, I'd say Slavic, with that build and shape of face. A little more coffee, Helen. Half a cup.
Mm-hmm. You're probably right. There's a sort of, oh, gypsy arrogance, boldness about her that makes me, well, uneasy, as if I'd have something to cope with.
We went up to bed early. I was pretty exhausted every night with all the physical work I had to do. I turned out the light and for some reason stepped over to the window. Jenny's room was downstairs on the same side of the house as ours in the rear. Her light was still on. She was getting ready for bed and her shadow, huge and black, lay across the lawn. Her arms were raised to take down those heavy braids. There was something actually classic about the thing. The picture of it stayed in my mind long after I'd got into bed. Well, two or three days went by, and Jenny... Well, the thing was, you were conscious of her all the time. Wherever she was, about the house, whatever she was doing, you thought about her. I was working in the garage one afternoon when she came out there with the butcher knife.
Mrs. Gare says you have a whetstone out here. Could I get you to sharpen my knife for me, Mr. Gare?
Of course. Just a moment.
What's that you're doing?
Oh, I'm trying to mend this old bear trap.
Oh, are you a trapper, Mr. Gare?
Oh, no, hardly. There's a coyote around that's been stealing the chickens. I'm hoping to catch him. There. Now then, let's have the knife.
What do you do, Mr. Gare?
Well, Jenny, Mrs. Gare was a concert pianist at the time of our marriage. I was a manager. Now I take care of her properties. Holdings, investments, you know.
You mean you sign things for her, like checks and papers and things?
Power of attorney, yes, that's part of it.
Hmm. Pretty soft for you. Huh, Mr. Gare?
Oh, on the contrary, it's quite a job. Keeps me busy.
I still say you've got a pretty setup. And she didn't get such a bad deal herself. She's crazy in love with you. Anybody can see that. Why not? You're good-looking, Mr. Gare. And young. You must be at least 12 years younger than she is.
Now, here's your knife, Jenny. Careful now. It's like a razor.
Thanks a lot. That's the way I want it. I can't stand a dull knife. So, I'll probably bother you often.
A few more days went by. I finished my trap and set it out near the chicken run, hoping I'd catch my thief. And one night after dinner, we were in the living room. What's the matter, Helen?
Steve, it's that girl. She was standing there in the dining room door listening.
Jenny? Well, she probably likes music. What's the harm?
Oh, it isn't that. She's always listening and watching. It's beginning to get on my nerves.
How about her work?
Oh, well, she works hard enough. She's willing and clean as a pin, but... Well, I have a feeling she doesn't respect me, that I just don't figure in her scheme of things. She's just simply taken the place over. I don't even run my own house anymore.
Well, fire her, why don't you?
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Say the word and I'll do it for
no,
you.
No, no, I don't want you to. Steve, frankly, I'd be afraid to tell her to go. She might get ugly and set fire to the house or something.
Oh, I never heard such nonsense in my life. What ails you, Helen? Aren't you well?
I'm just terribly nervous, Steve. Maybe that's why she takes advantage.
Well, let's settle that. I felt like a heel, though, because I was relieved that Helen didn't want to fire Jenny. I was obliged to admit to myself that the girl was getting under my skin. Any little service she had to perform for me, she made very special, standing as close as she dared. I could feel the magnetism of that strong, perfect body. Her hair smelled like new apples, and those clear green eyes would linger caressingly in mine. Then after about 2 weeks, one night, it must have been 1 or 2 o'clock.
Steve. Steve, wake up.
What's the matter?
That girl. I think she's out there in the hallway. I think she's been in this room.
Oh, Helen.
I'm frightened, Steve.
Please make a light.
Oh, all right. No one around. Helen, you must have been dreaming, dear.
Oh, perhaps I was. I dream about her often, Steve. Horrid, confused kind of dreams. I'm trying to scream for help and can't. It's just...
Oh, good Lord, Helen, I never thought anybody could get you down. You've got to control yourself somehow. This is just plain silly.
Yes. Yes.
I turned out the light and got back into bed. In a little while, I could hear Helen's even breathing and knew she was asleep. I lay there, thinking about Jenny, of course. I never thought of much else. In a moment, I heard the piano. So faint, I thought I was imagining it. And it came again. Weird, ghostly. I got up again, put on my robe, and slipped downstairs. The living room was dark except for the moonlight pouring through the window. And Jenny's figure, black against the light, was moving towards me. Almost before I knew it, she'd pressed close against me, crushing her mouth to mine. It was like being stung. Sharp, sweet, terrible. Jenny, what is this?
Don't kid me. You knew this was coming. That it had to come, that nothing could keep us apart. Now everything's going to be all right.
But Jenny, we can't. Helen is no fool.
We can't let her stand in our way.
What do you mean?
It won't be hard. Just a matter of figuring the best way.
I don't know what you mean, Jenny. And we can't stay here talking nights any longer.
It'll be just you and me, Steve. And all that money. Think what we can do with it. Just think.
Are you crazy?
Yeah. Crazy for you. Just like you are for me. Listen, Steve. Inside of 5 or 6 years, you're going to be stuck with a deaf old woman. What you going to do? Sit here and grow old with her? Not you. Sooner or later, you'll clear out. So why not now? With me?
Why, it's not so simple as you make it sound, my dear.
All you have to do is to spread around the town that Helen's going to visit her folks, Mississippi or someplace, and leave her to me. Afterwards, you can say your wife's decided to stay down south, that you're going to sell out and join her. Then we can turn everything into cash and we're on our way. Easy?
The next few days I worked outside till my hands bled and my whole body shrieked with pain. To keep from thinking, I began having nightmares. I'd wake up in a cold sweat and lie there longing for daylight, swearing that as soon as morning came, I'd throw that girl out of the house. But she'd brush against me or touch my hand, and I'd be wild for her again. I guess I knew then that sooner or later I'd agree to nearly anything she asked.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Gregory Peck in The Lonely Road by Marion Orth. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
All righty, Lisa, Suspense. We have 3 Suspense episodes on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. That's the first portion of The Lonely Road. All 3 of our Suspense episodes will star Gregory Peck. We're saluting Gregory Peck. This is a broadcast from March 21st, 1946. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. And you know what, Lisa? We're always hungry before we go on the air here, right? Well, guess what?
Well,
I solved our problem.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, so I parked in the WGN parking lot, right?
Right.
Lower Wacker. And I saw this sign, Volare Restaurant, and I heard about it. It's kind of world famous, the Volare Restaurant.
Yes, we've talked about it.
Italian food. And
I've
guess
never
what?
Been there.
I walked over there. They were jam-packed. So I said to myself, well, the food's got to be good. Sean, have you ever gone to this restaurant, Valari Restaurant?
I have not.
Okay.
A lot of people have told me they have great food.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's at 201 East Grand Avenue. I want to say hi to Johnny Marano because he is the owner manager and he was there, took care of me. And I got to tell you something. This is a plate. You want a great Italian food? It's right here. It's right here at 201 East Grand Avenue. And you could just, when you park your car in the WGN lot, you just walk right across the street and have a bite. I'm not going to be hungry tonight.
Well,
Lisa.
I'm thinking the three of us or a group of us should check it out sometime.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that was an invitation from Carl to take us out for dinner one night. Is that what you heard?
Yeah, Carl?
Yes. Yeah, I heard that.
All of us can park in the WGN
and then
lot.
I don't want
everybody else coming down trying to park
that's
in the
right.
WGN.
Well, here's what I'll do. I'll get a more money credit on my credit card, and I'll take you guys all over there. Because right now I got $18 is left on my credit card.
That's enough for me, isn't it?
The call, and maybe I can get an extra $30 on there for
you. All right,
Lisa.
Well, do what you got to do, and we accept your invitation.
Great prices. It was not expensive. The wine was fantastic. Maybe that's why I'm having a good time tonight. I had a couple of glasses. I had 1.5 glasses of wine. But the food, I had lasagna. It was unbelievable.
Well, we're excited to try it out with you.
Valari Restaurant, 201 East Grand Avenue. I want to thank them. They really took care of me over there today. Thank you. Thank you, David Jennings. All right. Ooh, I like this music. This is good. I like this. This reminds me of my disco days, Lisa. When
Sean
I had my,
is on it.
I know. This reminds me of my disco days, Sean. You know, when I had the silk shirt and the Italian horn. An Italian horn, and I had the very curly hair.
I can
hair.
See you in the middle of the dance floor.
And I was about 30 pounds
the disco
lighter.
Ball.
30 pounds lighter, my friend. And, you know, trying to...
And
trying
about 30 years younger.
Probably more than 30 years younger. And I was trying to get girls to dance with me, and they were just like, I would go up to them, hey, you want to dance? And they'd say,
I don't know how that goes. I've never done that before.
You know, and they didn't want to say no. They were like, oh, you know, I have a twisted ankle. I'd be like, well, then what are you doing at the disco if you have a twisted ankle?
I'm waiting for that guy right behind you to come over. That's
you know?
All.
She's like, oh, I was going to bring my crutches, but I left them at home. Right? Was that you, Lisa? No, you said you always used to say yes when people would want to ask you to dance.
Well, you don't want to make them feel bad, but just once.
These girls didn't care
about
making
you
feel bad.
You know what you do? You say yes once, and then you go, thank you, and then you walk away.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's what I used to do. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's still that right. It doesn't help. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. That's very funny. All right, so we play classic radio shows here every Saturday and Sunday night right here on Radio 720 WGN, the legendary WGN. We're broadcasting to about 40 states all across the country, parts of Canada as well. And tonight we have Suspense, 3 episodes of Suspense starring Cary Grant. Tomorrow night, Lisa.
No. Who are they starring tonight?
Did I say Cary Grant? I'm saying Gregory Peck.
That's
sorry
what
about
you meant.
That. You know who's on the air tomorrow night?
I sure do, but you can tell us.
I told you I had a glass and a half of wine. It might be a little
I didn't notice.
A little tipsy. So tomorrow we're going to salute William Powell, and we have 3 episodes that he is in, including The Burns and Allen Show, Suspense, and the Screen Guild Theater. But you, Lisa
Wolf, I was going to say, just a little disclaimer.
Are not going to be here.
I will not be here tomorrow night. And I have never missed a WGN radio
you
theater,
haven't
I? I don't think so.
I thought you missed one.
No, I don't know. I feel like
yes,
I haven't.
Yes, you did miss one.
All right, well, whatever.
You missed one.
Okay. I might have missed one, but I think I'm going to miss one more tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, just Sunday night. I won't be here, but then I will be back. I'm going on vacation just for a few days to New York. So
right.
I need a little break.
You need a break?
De-stressor, and then I'll be back right back here where I belong.
So I called on
a
pro. I called on a pro to co-host the show with me tomorrow.
I mean, who could fill my shoes?
So you ready for this? Who I was able to land for tomorrow's show?
I'm Katherine Heigl.
Nope, not Katherine Heigl. My crabby brother Vince Amari will be here with me. My crabby brother.
Well, he is kind of cranky.
You'll hear why he's known as crabby brother Vince.
Well, maybe he'll be on his best behavior.
We'll see.
We'll see.
So he will be here tomorrow night along with yours truly, and Lisa will be off to New York. Are you going to see a show out there?
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
This is a last-minute adventure, so we'll see.
All right. Well, let's get back to this now. Gregory Peck. Starring in The Lonely Road, here's the conclusion to Suspense.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Gregory Peck who, as Stephen Gare in The Lonely Road, continues a narrative well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Helen began to get on my nerves. It seemed that every day she looked older, washed out, became deafer. I began to despise her, to want her out of my way, out of Jenny's in my way. One morning at breakfast, Jenny came in and stood there looking at me fixedly.
Well, Jenny, what is it?
If you're going to town today, Mr. Gare, I've written down some things for the house.
Very well, Jenny. If your list's ready, give it to me. I'll be leaving in a few minutes. I knew what she meant. She was getting impatient. A reply, which she waited for with those green eyes fixed on mine, was virtually a consent to her plan. As for me, I wasn't sure what I meant to do, but I thought it would do no harm, at least, to set the ball rolling. In town, I dropped into the garage and asked the mechanic to look the car over. I said Mrs. Gare was planning a trip to visit her family in Mississippi, but I'd have to drive her into Tucson to take the train, and that my tires went so good. After that, I stopped at the realty office.
Well, really, Mr. Gare, you're thinking of selling that beautiful place of yours?
Oh, it's just a possibility. I don't want any prospective buyers about the places yet, but my wife is planning a trip south, and I may follow her and remain there permanently. Help such a problem. Place of ours takes a lot of handling. Fellow gets fed up after a while.
Well, there'd be no difficulty disposing of the property, Mr. Gare. Well, just let me know when you're ready, and meanwhile, I won't bother you with people coming.
I drove home in a sort of trance. I wasn't shocked at what I'd done, and the thing was still wide open if I wanted to back out. When I got home, I didn't want to go into the house. So far, I'd had no luck with the coyotes, so I busied myself setting the trap in another spot. While I was doing this, Jenny came out with that butcher knife again, and we went into the garage. Helen was at the piano.
Did you do what I told you to, Steve?
Yes.
Good. I can't stand this much longer.
Nor I, Jenny. But I can't bear to be here when...
Kiss me, Steve. Don't worry. It'll be when you're out of the house.
She didn't say any more, just looked at me with a twisted little smile. I gave her the sharpened knife, and she kissed me and went into the house. At dinner that night, Helen said...
I had words with Jenny today, Steve. I can't have her around any longer. You can fire her tonight, if you will.
What? Oh, no, my dear. I offered to do it once, and you wouldn't let me. Now you'll just have to do it yourself.
Steve, I'm afraid of her terribly.
Why, has she been ugly, threatening?
And don't shout so, Steve. I'm not as deaf as all that. And she'll hear you. No, she hasn't threatened me, nothing like that. There's just something about her that fills me with horror.
Oh, you're imagining things, Helen. What possible reason could she have for harming you?
I don't know, but this house has become a dreadful place. I'm cold all the time, and I'm shaky, and you seem different. You look at me sometimes as if you hate me.
Now, see here,
don't try to reason with me. If she doesn't get out of this house quick, I'll lose my mind. She's like a witch or something malignant or evil.
Jenny came in just then to change the plates for dessert. As she bent over to take the platter, she held that knife in her hand in such a way that my blood ran cool for a minute. After she'd gone out...
You haven't noticed it, but lately I haven't taken a mouthful of food until I've seen you start to eat for fear she'll poison me.
That's ridiculous. Why shouldn't she poison me as well?
Because she's crazy about you.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And you're crazy about her. Don't deny it, Steve. I may be deaf, but I'm not blind, you know.
Look, Helen, I'm going into town for a drive. If you want to fire Jenny while I'm gone, that's all right with me. I tried not to dwell on the immediate events, but to think about the time when I'd be free, to go away with Jenny. The drive into town seemed endless, but at last I, pulled up in front of the hotel.
Evening, Mr. Gare. Come for the papers?
Yes, and a cigar, maybe, Fred. I looked around the little lobby. There wasn't a soul in there that I knew. I watched the people. One minute, feeling sorry for them because their lives were so drab. The next, envying them because they were so secure, simple. And I was sitting there, staring unseeingly at the local paper, when I suddenly came out of this trance, or spell that I'd been under. The shock of realization was frightful. I didn't want anything to happen to Helen. I prayed to heaven I'd get home in time. I kept recalling similar instances of such crimes I'd read in newspapers. I'd always wondered how people could become involved in such things. Well, I knew all about it now. Weak fool to let a coarse preacher like that lead me into such a thing. If only I could be in time. I'd throw that girl out and devote the rest of my life to making Helen happy. Helen, generous, loving, intelligent, and talented. Why hadn't I thought of all this before? Then I saw the car. It was parked at the side of the highway right at my turnoff. I knew it was a police car. I cursed to myself and prayed. Don't let them take long. I've got to be in time for Helen. Please. An officer stepped out into the road and waved his flash. Please, I said to myself. Please.
Hello.
What's up, officer?
Oh, looking for a stolen car, but not a baby like that one.
A local car, was it?
Yeah. Hey, you better let me have a look at your operator's card, my friend. You must have been doing about 80 along that stretch.
Oh, sure. Here you are, officer. Sorry I was overdoing it. I was just in town, and I guess I stayed longer than I intended. My wife's alone in the house and not very well, and I was in a hurry to get home.
You live down this road?
That's right.
Say, maybe that car could have got down in there. I think I'll...
No. I would have seen it.
Okay, Mr. Gare. Just take it easy, will you?
Certainly will, officer. And thanks. Good night. To do. I stood there in the doorway, looking up. There was a light upstairs in the window of our bedroom. It threw a radiance on the screen door and burned with a steady glow, as if it had been burning like that for ages. As if it had witnessed a scene of horror and brooded over it, keeping the secret to itself. When I started finally for the house, my legs were so stiff I could scarcely walk. I stayed off the gravel, walking on the grass, and went in the back door. There wasn't a sound. I tiptoed through the kitchen, through the dining room, across the hall. Then I could see the light from that lamp spilling down the stairway at the far end of the dark living room. My heart thumped so loud I could hear it. I wanted to call out, but I didn't dare. Whom would I call? Perhaps everything was all right. Perhaps Helen was up there in bed. How I prayed she was. I hesitated on the threshold, thought of glancing into Jenny's room, but that would have looked queer if nothing had happened. I stepped over the threshold. Ah! It was that trap, that bear trap. Somebody had placed it there, ready for me. Who? It was excruciating. I wrenched and pulled at the thing. Helen, Jenny, somebody! Come and give me a hand. Oh! Who is it? Oh, help me. Help me, hurry, I'm caught in this trap. Get the hammer, pliers, anything. She reached the bottom of the stairs and snapped on the lights. I've never seen such a sight in my life. There was blood all over the place. On the wallpaper, the white paint. Then I saw Jenny lying on the floor in a crumpled heap, her long braids soaking in Helen's dress. Her hands and face were spattered with it. Her hair was disheveled. Her eyes like pinpoints of fire. And against her side, I could see the gleam of that long, sharp knife. She was coming slowly towards me. Oh, we were beautifully caught, Jenny and I. She with her knife, I with my trap. Helen, don't look like that. What's happened?
You planned this together, you two. But it didn't turn out just as you thought it might.
Helen, you please don't look at me like that.
Well, there she is. Look at her. If I hadn't been ready for her, I'd be lying in her place and you'd be glad, wouldn't you, Steve?
No, no. Helen. Helen, are you insane? Drop that knife, for heaven's sake, and listen to me. She came closer. I made a lunge for her. The grip of that steel about my leg threw me off balance and I fell forward. She sprang on me. I fought her off, but that knife came at me. Face, throat, everywhere like flashes of lightning. Helen, don't do this to me. I swear I came back. Ah! Helen! Don't! No! Well, Lieutenant, that police car arrived in time to save my life. But I wish they'd let her finish the job. Then and there.
Okay, Gare. Okay, thanks. I'll send the doc right in. And, Gare, I wouldn't worry too much about Helen. I think she'll be all right.
Suspense, presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Gregory Peck. Like everyone else here in the film colony, I've always admired suspense, and it's been very exciting to appear here tonight. I want to thank Maria Palmer, who appeared as Jenny, and Kathy Lewis, who enacted the role of Helen in tonight's play. Next Thursday on Suspense, a very famous character of crime fiction will make his debut on the air. That'll be Baynard Kendrick's remarkable blind detective, Captain Duncan MacLean. And Brian Donlevy will play Captain MacLean in a radio play built around one of the most ingenious and cunning murders I've ever heard about. I'll surely be listening, and I know you will want to listen next Thursday to Suspense.
Gregory Peck will soon be seen as star of The Yearling, produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Mr. Brian Donlevy as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrill.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Suspense is broadcast from coast to coast and to our men and women of the armed forces overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was the golden tones of Truman Bradley right there, calling it California. Yeah? They used to call it California. They like to put the nia in there.
And sometimes it's just an accent of where you're from.
Right, it could be. Does Truman Bradley have as deep a voice as I do, do you think? Yeah, probably.
You're pretty close. You're really, really deep.
I don't know. Yeah.
Very baritone.
Mine is pretty deep there,
yeah,
Lisa.
You got a good, deep, heavy voice.
I know.
Kinda
that's from
little,
March 21st, 1946, Suspense, The Lonely Road with Gregory Peck along with Kathy Lewis and a terrific cast, Wally Mayer, Joseph Kearns in there. It was produced and directed by William Spear, and it was heard on CBS. We have two more episodes of Suspense with the great Gregory Peck this evening and into the wee hours of the morning here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. All right, I'm going to have to bring the disco ball out. We'll start the disco ball going.
Sean is bringing something out of Carl that I'm not sure we want to see, Sean.
Yeah, come on. I have the silk pants and the silk shirt.
Like I said, Sean, we don't want to go any further with this.
And the silk shirt open all the way down to your navel.
Yes.
And the gold chain around the neck. Oh, God. Did we actually dress like
we
that?
We did dress
did
like that.
Did you do that too, David?
No, I didn't have that kind of nerve. There were several buttons undone.
Yeah.
But no, not down to the navel.
And you know what I had back then, too? You're going to love this. I had a pinky ring. Yeah,
I had a pinky ring.
Had a pinky ring.
A gold nugget.
It was a pretty
like
big
a gold nugget.
Oh yeah, I thought I was something else, Sean. Let me tell you.
You thought you still don't.
No,
think
I don't.
That you are?
Now I don't think I was back then.
No. Now do you think you're something else right now?
Well,
you're something else.
I'm something otherworldly,
you're
maybe.
Something else.
Yeah,
right.
I had the pinky ring. It was a gold ring. It wasn't real gold.
Platform shoes.
Had
too?
The Oh gosh, yeah. I had the platform shoes.
Well, he needed it,
but I only wore them.
That's a good one.
I only wore them one time because I told this story on the air, but Sean must not have heard this. But you know what, Sean? Here's the deal. I wanted platform shoes really badly.
Sure.
And I said to my mom, Ma, please buy me these platform shoes. She was like, you're going to twist your ankle. You can't do this. You won't be able to walk on them. And I begged her and begged her.
You're not like
her.
Us. We know how to walk in heels.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I finally got through to her, and she bought me the platform shoes. They're a good 4-inch platform shoes, and the very first day I wore them, I twisted my ankle, and so you know what? That was it. I never wore them again. So I probably still have them somewhere, but I think my
feet
grew since then. So
I don't want to.
You want me
them.
To bring them in?
No,
they were
do
red.
You, Sean?
They were red.
I don't think so.
No,
they
we're
were
good.
Red.
We're
I remember
good.
They were red.
I like red shoes.
They're red.
Not those.
They sort of like, the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy's only with a higher heel. Definitely.
With some glitter on them, some sparkles.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
Yeah.
But, man, those were the days. I used to go to a discotheque called Stay Out. That was the name of it. It was in, Stone Park, I think. Stone Park.
Sean, do you see what you've done here?
My
Stay Out sounds like a late drive-thru.
Yeah.
Or like a nice burger or something.
And my best friend in the whole wide world, Vince Lombardi, and I, we would be in that bathroom getting ready, with the hair, with the blow dryer and the whole nine yards and the cologne.
Your best friend was Vince Lombardi.
Vince Lombardi, not the football coach, but his name was Vince Lombardi. And you know what? I'm trying to think, Polo. I think it was Polo Cologne.
Ralph Lauren.
Yeah, Ralph Lauren's Polo Cologne. And we just, it was basically bathed in it, and maybe that's why nobody wanted to dance with
I'm
me.
I'm sure you were very attractive, Carl.
Yeah. I posted a picture.
No, Lisa, it's like the girls are going.
I would have a little sarcasm.
Someone
in that,
someone smells like a French hooker. Okay, go away, please.
Somebody
go.
Stinks. I actually posted a picture a while back on the WGN Facebook page. It's on there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
anyway,
that's okay. We don't
all right. Well, we are just
all
reminiscing a little bit. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights. And by the way, happy Sunday, everyone. It's 12:11 in the morning, and we have two more episodes of Suspense starring Gregory Peck on this edition. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will return as the voice of Woody in Toy Story 4 when Woody and Buzz go on an adventure to find Bo Peep.
Okay.
Ooh, and the winner gets a pair of tickets to see Chops, which is playing at Theater Wit on Belmont.
Chops. And what
Chops.
Is Chops exactly?
I'll tell you when the winner wins.
Oh, okay. Fine. Sounds good. All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You will hear this actor here. No hint beyond his voice is necessary.
And then, just like that, somebody turned off the rain and the sun come out.
Sun came out.
Oh, yeah, that was perfect.
312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back. This is show 91 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip again.
Then, just like that, somebody turned off the rain and the sun come out.
And we've got Jim on the line from Elk Grove Village. Hey, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good, good.
It's good to hear from you.
Yeah.
So, who is that voice?
Would that be Tom Hanks?
Definitely Tom Hanks. You are a winner. I hope you love the theater.
Yeah,
good,
sure.
Good. You can get a pair of tickets to see Chops. It's playing July 7th through August 14th at the Theater Wit, which is on Belmont. It's about three middle-aged jazz freaks who are charmed by a beautiful and mysterious woman, and it's a world premiere starting right here in Chicago. And for more information, you can go to theaterwit.org. Thank you so much, Jim, for calling in and for listening to our show.
Oh, sure. Good show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Hey, I want to tell everybody, since we just talked about Tom Hanks, he is in a new movie coming out. Well, it's not coming out till September 9th, but I have to tell you, I'm working with some of the people that produced this film, and it is amazing. You can go on and watch the trailer. The trailer just came out the other day. It's called Sully, and it's all about Sully Sulligren, the pilot who landed the plane on the Hudson River.
Yeah,
and
I read
Tom
about
Hanks
it.
Plays Sully Sulligren. And this is a movie directed by the great Clint Eastwood. And it's there's never been anything like this as far as special effects in a movie. You will not believe. I've seen a lot of this kind of behind-the-scenes type of thing. But you can check out the trailer. Just Google Sully trailer and watch it. It comes out September 2nd. I think you're going to really love it. You will not believe Tom Hanks looks so much like Sully Sulligren. He lost a lot of weight for it. He's all white, you know, white hair and everything.
There are very few movies with Tom Hanks that aren't fantastic.
The guy is
the best
in the business.
He's gold.
Yeah, also Aaron Eckhart is in the film. He plays the co-pilot. And I got to tell you, the special effects are going to blow your mind in this movie. So it's really cool.
Great.
Yep, the great Clint Eastwood directing Sully. All right, it's time for another episode of Suspense. This is a broadcast from September 16th, 1948. It's called The Hitchhike Poker, and it stars Gregory Peck. Let's tune into part one now of Suspense.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Gregory Peck in Anton Lieder's production of Hitchhike Poker. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Want a ride, young fella?
Oh, you bet.
How far are you going?
Oh, hi.
Well, hop in. Well,
thanks.
That's how I met J. Stewart Belden in his canary yellow convertible. That's how I took the ride. I'll be a long time forgetting. He looked to be about 45, and he wasn't bad looking for a guy that old. He was well built, about my size, no gray in his hair. And that coat he was wearing, boy, I'll bet plenty of camels went under the clippers for that one.
So you're a student, eh?
I graduate from Berkeley this year.
I suppose you're a vet?
Oh, yes, more than half the guys are vets.
What's your name, son?
Ridge Fowler.
Married?
Not me.
Don't tell me you're a woman hater.
Oh, no, it's not that. It's just, well, I have enough trouble feeding myself.
I said the same thing years ago. Ah, but you'll change your mind when the right girl comes along. 9B1863. Dud.
Huh?
Oh, didn't you ever play license plate poker?
License plate poker? Never heard of it.
It's just like regular poker, except instead of drawing cards, you draw license plates. Now, I drew that hand. There was nothing in it. Next card we see will be your hand. Here comes one now. Watch the license plate. 4J3134, two pair, threes and fours. You beat me.
Hey, that's a good game. What are the stakes?
Well, make it easy on yourself. Shall we say $100,000 a hand?
See what I mean? Good Joe. A lot of laughs and small talk. And all the time, that convertible eating the miles up. What a car. We practically flew through Salinas, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Maria.
Well, son, what do you say to a hamburger? I know a little place in Santa Ynez where they make a hamburger that drips with royalty.
Oh, you got me sold.
And on the side, French fried onions, shoestring potatoes, and the coldest beer in the world.
Stop, you're killing me.
Now, tell me, did I overrate the place?
Boy, that was terrific.
The trouble is they give you too much food in there. I've got to quit eating like that. My clothes are getting tight. Especially this coat.
Well, that coat sure is a beauty. I'm nuts about camel's hair.
You are? Say, I've got an idea. Why don't you try it on?
Oh, no, Mr. Belden. I didn't mean
it. Go ahead. You're just enough thinner than I am that it ought to fit you fine.
Well, gosh, I...
Here, go ahead. Try it on. College boy can always use a coat.
Oh, well, it's a good fit.
It was made for you.
Well, I don't know what to say. That's a coat for a king.
Well, I guess that makes you a monarch then, son. Because it's your coat now.
I couldn't get over it. A coat like that, mine? I'll bet Mom's eyes will really pop when she sees it on me. Must have cost a year's tuition. I climbed back into the car and slouched down into the maroon leather seat and waited for him while he made a phone call. Boy, I felt like a king, all right. I was deep in a daydream when he came out of the phone booth.
Okay, Rich, here we go.
Hey, look, a straight.
Huh?
I drew a straight. 2J3456.
Really? Straight? That's the highest hand today. That'll be tough to beat.
Darn tough. Well, we drove for quite a while, not talking much. We'd left Highway 101 at Santa Ynez, where we got the hamburgers. There weren't many cars on the road, and Belden hadn't been able to draw anything to beat my straight. In fact, he seemed to lose interest in the game. He was concentrating on the road. It was a treacherous road, curved and high, full of hairpin turns, but he handled the car beautifully, taking those curves fast but sure, never slowing down a bit. Well, I like speed, but all of a sudden I felt nervous the way he was hugging the edge. I turned to look at him to say something, and the words stuck in my throat. He changed. No more the smiling host. Instead, he was fastened to the wheel like a hawk. That's what he looked like, a hawk, ready to strike. I was tongue-tied at the change in him. I guess my reflexes worked slowly, but his didn't. He threw open his door, twisted the wheel. Hey!
So long, sonny!
He jumped clear, and when the car hurtled into space, I was alone in it. My head smashed into the windshield. Another jolt threw me against the door. I'm not too clear at this point, but the next thing I knew, I was flying through space again. Only this time, I was free of the car. I landed, sprawled against the side of the hill. I began to slip, roll. I grabbed wildly, desperately for just anything to stop myself. When it happened, it was the trunk of a twisted, gnarled old tree that grew out of the hillside. Hit me square in the stomach, knocked the wind right out of me. I lay there, too hurt to care. It was a minute or two before I got up enough breath to move. Finally, I edged my way up the cliff, hand over hand. It was brutal, but I was surprised to discover that I hadn't fallen as far as it seemed. I was climbing around a bulge of boulders, not more than 8 feet from roadside level, when I looked up. There was Belden. A gun in his hand. I ducked and the bullets scaled off the boulders. He wanted me dead, that was for sure. He wanted to kill me. Why? Why? I waited, crouched. Then I heard the horn. I came out from behind the boulders, crawled up on the road. Belden was nowhere in sight. I didn't see what kind of a car it was. I didn't even think to look. All I saw was he beat my straight. 4L5555. That was the license. 4L5555. Four of a kind. All of a sudden, I was shaking. I looked at myself. was beat up, cut, filthy. But what was worse, the camel's hair coat was a mess. King? I had to laugh. Belden was king. I was just the joker. My back hurt, my head throbbed, I ached all over. But I walked every inch of the way back to Santa Ynez. It was dark by the time I got there. When I stood in front of the police station, I realized for the first time the meaning of the word sanctuary. I took a deep breath. I wanted to tell the police as straight a story as possible. I opened the door.
There he is, officer. That's the boy who stole my car, forced me out, took my coat. Just look in the side pocket of the coat. You'll find my wallet.
This couldn't be. What was Belden doing here in the police station? What was he trying to pull? I knew even before I put my hand in the coat that Belden's wallet would be there. And I knew, too, that the police would never believe me, no matter what I said. I was trapped. The desk sergeant was waiting for me to talk, but my throat was dry. My tongue was paralyzed. My brain spinning.
Well, when do you get to save yourself?
Oh, you don't understand. You see, he gave me the coat. I didn't know about the wallet.
Is that the best you can do?
But I tell you, he picked me up when I was hitchhiking. I was going home from school for the weekend. Then he forced me off the road. He tried to kill me. He shot at me.
Sergeant, let the boy go.
But Mr. Belden...
I've changed my mind. I don't intend to press charges.
But this kid's crazy.
Easy, Sergeant. He's a war veteran.
Oh, I see.
Oh, no. Lock me up, please. Don't believe him.
Everyone is entitled to one mistake. Any boy who is big enough to come into the police station voluntarily, give himself up, deserves another chance.
If I could have erased the memory of his face when he twisted that wheel and screamed, "So long, Sonny." All these benevolent words would have fooled me like they were fooling the desk sergeant. Belden was bursting with sweetness and light. But every word he said to release me only tightened the web tighter. And I knew just as sure as I was standing there that he wasn't through with me. That walking out of that door would be like releasing the clay bird at a trap shoot.
Well, it's up to you, Mr. Belden, if you're sure he won't cause any more trouble.
I'm positive that after tonight, this young man will be no trouble to anyone.
No trouble to anyone. After tonight, I had to get away from there. I had to run.
All right. That's some suspenseful suspense there.
That's a good thing.
Right?
That it's suspenseful.
You want suspense on suspense, don't you?
I would think so.
That is The Hitchhike Poker Part 1 starring Gregory Peck. Two of his most famous movie roles, Lisa. Captain Ahab, right? Moby Dick.
Right.
And what about To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah,
Atticus?
Finch.
Finch.
Like the bird.
Yes. So pretty good, Lisa. You know, this Lisa Wolf over here, she's something else.
Yeah,
she's pretty good.
Something else is right.
Chock full of information in that giant bulbous, humongous cranium.
Hopefully
with
I'm
all
I'm
brains.
Here to add something to the show.
Sean, this woman has a brain the size of... What? She's got a giant brain in there.
It's attractive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
Sean?
A big, giant, bulbous brain inside. Yeah, but it looks good. You wear it well, Lisa.
Thank you.
You wear it well.
Thank
you. Let's take
you.
A quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, 12:35 on a Sunday morning. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and glamorous, and your head is not bulbous, Lisa. We just
You're
joke
just
around.
You're feeling badly. That's
well,
okay.
You know, we always talk, you know, how this all happened, how this all came about. Sean, just so you know, Lisa has two master's degrees. This is a very smart woman over here. Very smart. She has two master's degrees, and I have none. You know, I have no master's degrees, and I've always tried to get one of those. You know, I think it's just kind of
stingy.
Yeah, it's like covetous. What's the word I'm thinking of?
I have no idea.
I'm coveting those two master's degrees. I think she should give me one of them. Which one, of the two, which one do you like the most? The one in teaching or the one in...
It depends who I'm talking to that minute.
Right.
I'm, you know, fickle that way.
Right.
But you know what?
Whichever one you're not as fond of, let me have that one.
Listen, you'll have to share your knowledge and passion for classic radio with me,
do.
Which you have been doing
I've
for the last...
I've been trying to do this.
How long have we known each other? About nine,
two,
10
I think.
Years?
Too long. Yeah,
right,
too
Roger?
Long.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's been a
well,
long time.
Well, wait a minute, Carl. Yeah. You know, there's a thing called a computer and a printer, and they do wondrous things now. I can print you up a master's degree.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It will look very official.
Really?
We can get a little ribbon to stick on it.
Wait a minute, Roger. That sounds like the Wizard of Oz, right? Where they print up the diploma.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Exactly. That's Roger. Roger's our wizard.
Put him up.
So here's the thing. Lisa has two master's degrees, and so a long time ago, we were on the air. I started saying, "Well, yeah, you have like two brains in there, and this gigantic
bulbous."
You used
to call me this like two brain
she
girl.
She has this. She walks in
kind of like that movie, the man with two heads.
Yeah,
yes.
Remember? Yeah.
No, she's kind of like Quasimodo. Quasimodo.
I am a very attractive woman.
Yes, she is a very attractive woman.
I was being not,
but she does. But she really doesn't have a bulbous head.
No, she doesn't.
But
Bulbous Head Society called and said they were offended that you were saying that about her.
Roger, always somebody is going to be offended no matter what we say. So we give up. We don't care anymore.
But you know, here's the nice thing. Lisa just never wanted to be out of school. She just wanted to stay
and
in
that's
school.
Great.
Well,
talk
to Roger.
Learner.
Roger, you taught for a long time. You love the educational system.
Love it. I'd still
do
be
too.
Doing it if I could.
Carl, I was calling you Carl. I love being in school.
Don't
I
insult
loved,
him.
It's an honor. Are you kidding?
I loved being a student. I loved being a teacher. I like the educational setting.
Yeah.
I like a campus. I loved going to school.
When Lisa turned 48, she decided, you know what? I'm
enough
done with school. Enough with school.
Yeah.
I'm not
done
40
with this
yet.
Now. And she was like, yeah, but you know what? I you know what? That takes a lot of perseverance. And Lisa, I commend you. I couldn't wait to get out of college.
I couldn't wait to get to college.
Yeah,
so that's
wait.
Why we compliment couldn't each other,
couldn't wait
Carl.
To get out and start making a living, you know, even though it was minimum wage at the time, you know.
Delivering pizzas.
But I'm going to write a book about it someday. I'm going to write a book.
Oh, you have plenty for that,
Sean,
book.
I delivered pizzas for 2.5 years. That was quite a time in my life.
Hey, Carl,
see, it's going to be a special book.
Yeah.
You know why? Because the first chapter is like getting a plain cheese pizza. And if you want to read more about him, like the extra toppings, you're going to have to pay more for the next chapters. What a businessman.
Chapter two, mushrooms. Because I'm such a fun guy.
Hey, but I tell you.
Wait. There you go. Delayed response there. So Lisa did work at Wendy's, and what? You threw up the first day? And had to, is that what it is?
I did, at Wendy's.
Oh, my God.
It was really not the place for me. I'm just going to be diplomatic.
Right.
It just wasn't the right place for me.
Well, delivering pizzas was for me. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, knocked on some girls' doors.
I met a lot of interesting people, Roger.
Sure,
you know what?
I've had
a lot of jobs. We'll have to talk about it another time. But
you've had so many jobs, you decided to change your first name to Steve.
Roger, no laughing at him. You're egging him on.
No,
here.
I just can't believe he was that quick
that
on
was,
the.
That
drum.
Was a good one. That
yeah.
was quick.
Was it?
It was a good one.
Oh,
yeah.
Pretty
yeah,
good.
Not bad.
Pretty
See, it's
good.
Timing. Timing in comedy.
Yes.
He got it on that one.
I've got a couple more.
Huh? Yeah,
a couple
well,
more.
Save
you can keep them.
Save them, yeah. Save them.
All right. Are we ready to get back to this?
Okay, suspense right. it is.
Let's get back to Hitchhike Poker from September 16th, 1948. The star is Gregory Peck. Here's part two of Suspense.
I don't know how long I ran. I didn't know where I was. The town was behind me. I stopped. Out of breath. I tried to light a cigarette. My hands shook like I had the palsy. It was like the South Pacific. Snipers and trees, but what trees? Where? Then I saw the bright, glaring neon ahead. Mackinac's, one sign said, and Wayside Rest Trucks Welcome, the other. Just a dinky service station and a lunch wagon, but it was an oasis to me.
Howdy. Hey, what's the matter, Bud? You sick?
No, I'm all right.
You sure look green around the gills. Been in a fight?
How soon will the truck start coming through?
You got a long wait, about 2-3 hours. Been in an accident?
Look, mister, I've got to get a ride to Ojai. Do you mind if I hang around and wait?
Oh, I don't mind. Won't do no good, though. Ain't allowed to pick up riders, company rules. Might be lucky and catch a wildcatter, but I doubt it.
Oh, thanks.
You sure you're all right? Maybe you better go next door and get yourself a cup of coffee. Sure look like you could use one.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
If a ride turns up, I'll call you.
Thanks, Mac.
Oh, I'm not Mac. I'm Al. Mac works days.
Well, I felt halfway decent when I came out of the lunch wagon. I'd cleaned myself up and reduced my capital to 15 cents. Al had a customer.
Gas and oil, that'll be $2.80. Hey, Bud, come here.
Huh?
I got you a ride to Ojai.
Oh, you have? Who with?
The little lady here. She's been driving all day, got an awful headache. She's going straight to Ojai. Here's the fella I was telling you about, lady, that needed a ride to Ojai.
Oh, I'm afraid you misunderstood. I just said I wished I had somebody to drive me.
Oh, well, I don't blame you for not wanting to take a rider, but I'd appreciate it if you'd change your mind. I've got to get to Ojai tonight.
Well, I am tired.
Oh, go ahead, miss. He's a nice fella.
Well, if you'll vouch for
him. Now, wait a minute, lady. I don't vouch for anybody.
All right. I guess it'll be all right.
It was a pleasure to drive for her. She didn't say much, and I didn't feel like talking. She just sat there beside me, her eyes closed, resting. Once in a while, I snatched a quick look at her. She had long, dark eyelashes resting on her marble-like cheeks, hands folded in her lap. I found myself remembering when the right girl comes along. I was trying to remember who said it when I saw her looking at me. Feel better?
Much better. I'm ashamed of myself, hesitating to let you drive my car. I'm afraid I'm overcautious.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Can't be too careful.
One reads of such awful things happening on the road.
Yeah. Awful things. I hadn't thought of Belden since we left Al's gas station. Now he was back in the front of my mind.
You're going awfully fast. These curves are treacherous.
I guess I'm just anxious to get home.
Oh, yes, but look out! Do you want to kill us both? You almost sideswiped.
Oh, I'm sorry, I...
What are you honking now for? He's gone.
Your horn.
What about it?
Oh, nothing. I thought I'd heard it before.
Before? Look, maybe I'd better drive.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'll be all right. I'm sorry. I'd be sewing up my sleeves if I didn't get a hold of myself. I must have been crazy, thinking that her horn was the same as the one that had honked for Belden when I was hanging on the side of that hill. It was just a horn. A lot of horns sound alike. I tried to steady myself. I didn't want her to catch on how rattled I was. I turned to her to apologize. She was putting a cigarette in her mouth, but it was purely automatic. She was sitting up straight, tense. Her eyes were glued to the road ahead. Then it hit me. I'd been over this road earlier tonight with Belden. Suddenly, it loomed up, that wide bank curve just ahead, the spot where Belden had tried to kill me. My hands froze on the wheel. I held my breath, and then I saw her hand reach out. What are you doing?
Let go of my wrist. What's wrong with you? I was only reaching for the cigarette lighter on the dashboard.
Oh. I'm sorry. That curve back there, it...
Pull over and stop.
Huh?
Pull over. I'm going to drive.
She drove about a mile, I guess. Neither one of us said anything. Then, without any warning, she took a sharp turn off the highway and down a rutted dirt road. Hey, miss, you're leaving the highway.
We better stop a while. You don't look so well.
Oh, I'm all right now.
You don't look it. Better have a drink. I'll reach in the glove compartment to find some scotch.
Oh, no, really, I'm all right.
Well, then maybe I need it.
Maybe it was the drink. Maybe it was the girl. Maybe it was just relief. But I felt peace for the first time that night. I watched her inhale. The glow from the cigarette lit up her high cheekbones. I couldn't see her eyes until she turned her head.
What's your name?
Ridge.
Mine's Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
You must think I'm pretty much of a jerk the way I've been acting.
It's all right. Things like that happen to everybody.
Yeah, I guess so. Look, I'm all right now. I could drive.
What's your hurry?
Well, I thought...
What's the matter? Don't you like to sit here with me?
Well, no, it's just... I thought you were in a hurry.
I'm not now. Are you?
No. No, I'm in no hurry at all. She didn't seem to be moving. It was so gradual. I caught a trace of warm perfume in her hair. She smiled at me. One of those elusive smiles, half innocent, half... Her head touched my shoulder. I accepted the invitation.
I like you, Ridge. I like you a lot.
Yeah. You know, tonight back in the filling station, when I first saw you, I...
What's the matter, Ridge?
The miniature license tag on your key ring.
Yes?
4L5555.
Four of a kind.
Four of a... You play license plate poker?
I'm afraid so, Ridge.
Four fives. It's the license of the car that picked Belden up after he tried to kill me.
That's right.
Then you're in it with...
me, Sonny!
I fell right out of the car. Hard. My face buried in the dirt. I didn't black out, but it would have been much easier if I had. Only my mind functioned. Everything else seemed paralyzed.
Well, you took your time getting here.
I was delayed.
He was supposed to be here waiting. What if I hadn't been able to keep him?
Oh, I knew I could depend on you, darling, to detain him.
What is that supposed to mean?
Did you have to go as far as you did? Did you have to let him kiss you?
Do you know a better way to keep a man on ice?
A perfect wife, a little helpmate.
Oh, shut up. Put him in the back seat.
Now, just a moment, darling. I'm going to do it right this time. There'll be no slip-ups.
You fool! Put that gun away!
Why?
Don't you realize if a bullet is found in the body, it won't be accidental death?
You're always so right, aren't you, darling?
Only because you're so stupid.
Stupid, am I? Who planned this whole thing?
You did, and badly. If you'd handled it right in the first place, his body would be burned up by now, along with the car. Now put him in the back!
Belden's wife. But what... Why did they want to kill me? Why? Belden picked me up. Throw me in the back of the car.
Hand me the wrench, Virginia.
Stuart!
This time, warm, black oblivion rushed over me. After a second, the pain was gone. And so was I. Consciousness returned in splotches.
Oh, we've plenty.
My head was like a shortwave receiver, now static, now clear. Now clear, now static, now...
Anything behind us?
Nobody.
We're almost there.
Are you sure no one has discovered the car yet?
Of course not. The way it's lying, nobody will see it until daylight. And then J. Stuart Belden will be found dead, burned to an unrecognizable crisp. We can shake this place, go to South America.
You can go. I have to stick around, remember, to collect the insurance and pretend I'm heartbroken you're dead.
Will that be so hard? You didn't talk like this when you married me. But of course, there was a lot more money then.
Yes, swindled from suckers.
Since when have you become fussy about where money comes from? What's changed you? The schoolboy?
Don't be a fool.
All right, we've got to work fast. Give me a hand with him.
Wait.
Huh?
Here comes a car.
The end of the line. But anyway, now I knew why. I was a stand-in for a corpse.
I'll put it in this pocket as soon as I get him out of the car. All clear?
Yes.
This was it. They were on either side of me. I had to think straight. My body still felt numb. One chance. If only my muscles coordinated, I'd wait till he dragged me out of the car and then I'd fight.
Virginia, get the gasoline can out.
I felt him grab me under the armpits. I opened my eyes just in time to see that murderous wrench in the girl's hand. As she brought it down, my eyes closed. It hit me hard, but it wasn't the wrench, it was Belden. The wrench had folded him up and he collapsed on top of me. Every nerve in my body was alert now. I didn't know what would come next, but I was ready for it. She pulled Belden's body off me. She wasn't aware of me watching her. She was too busy dragging Belden over to the rim of the cliff. She was transfigured with hate.
Well, Stuart, it's how you planned it. Accidental death!
And then she kicked him, and he disappeared over the edge. I didn't wait to see any more. I crawled out of that car, and I started to run right down the middle of the road. She saw me.
Wait! Stop! Wait, Ridge!
But I kept right on going. I glanced back. She started the car. She was coming right at me. First, I thought she was just trying to catch up to me. Then I realized she was trying to run me down. She was trying to kill me. I was crossing to the left side of the road. She was right behind me. It was just a question of seconds, and suddenly, around the bend, a big truck. I was sandwiched between them. I stood, stunned with horror, her scream ringing through my head, and the picture of her in the car swerving off into space into the canyon below.
Hey, Bud, you all right?
Yeah.
What happened?
She went off the road.
A crazy woman driver. We'll have to report it. Come on, I'll give you a ride into town. Do you hear me? Don't you want a ride?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
What are you staring at?
Your license plate. CM1111.
Hey, it wasn't my fault. You saw how it happened.
Four aces. Four aces. I'd won. I'd taken the last hand. But as long as I live, I'll jump out of my skin whenever a car pulls up and a voice asks,
"Want a ride, young fella?" Thank you, Gregory Peck, for a splendid performance.
It's been a great pleasure to appear here tonight with this fine cast of suspense actors. And I'm expecting almost as much pleasure from listening next Thursday when radio's outstanding theater of thrills brings you Robert Young and Virginia Bruce in Celebration, another gripping study in
suspense. Gregory Peck may soon be seen starred in the 20th Century Fox production Yellow Sky. Ed Begley played the part of Belden, and Kay Brinker was Virginia. Tonight's suspense play was written by John and Gwen Bagney, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Bluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such outstanding stars as Edward G. Robinson, Lucille Ball, Ray Milland, and John Garfield. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And next Thursday, same time, hear Robert Young and Virginia Bruce in Celebration.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Attention, all men. Join the fighting outfit that defends America, the new National Guard. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is Suspense with the Hitchhike Poker, starring Gregory Peck. Also in the cast, Ed Begley, and that was Ed Begley Jr.'s dad. He did a ton of radio work along with Kay Brinker, and that is heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that from September 16th, 1948. And we have another episode of Suspense starring the great Gregory Peck in our next hour. But first, let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. That is the one and only Roger Badish up there. What's up, Roger?
I'm doing great. Yeah. How are you doing, Carl?
I'm doing good, buddy.
Excellent.
Good
Excellent.
To see you. Happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you very
and
much.
And sounding as good as ever. If I just could have the golden tones of Roger Badish.
Well, it'll cost you.
Yeah.
It'll cost you. I charge by the minute.
I'm willing to pay. I make minimum wage.
Okay.
And I can give up about 20% of that.
You're laughing, Roger. It's seriously not funny.
Well, I'm glad they've raised the federal minimum wage. Now I can get a couple extra pennies from them.
What is minimum wage?
Well, actually, they raised it in Chicago. It's up to $10.50 an hour now.
$10.50.
Yeah. It'll go up over the next few years.
Oh, good. So there's hope left for us.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. There's hope for you. Yeah,
even
that's actually great. They needed to raise it. I mean, it's tough to make a living on $11 an hour. $10
I know.
An hour, you know,
yes,
Lisa
I
worked
do.
At Wendy's for one whole day. She knows. Let me tell you, she knows.
They got your pay though for the cleaning.
I've had a lot of other jobs.
Do you remember? Did they pay you for that day that you
they
vomited?
Did. Yes, they did.
Wow.
They paid her.
That's a heck of a
did
way
you
to
work
put it.
The whole day?
I vomited.
Did you work the whole day and then vomit at the end of the day? Or
I left in the middle of the day because
they paid her like 3.5 hours and then they took some cleaning supplies out of your paycheck.
I've had a lot of other jobs.
What other jobs did you have?
Anywhere you threw up at them? Or?
No, just the one.
Just the one.
You know,
I'm
not
goodness.
Good with food. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
I'm not meant to
Except
work with
Mies
food.
Except for Mies Meals. You're good with Mies Meals.
I mean, I'm not good to work at a restaurant
place,
type thing,
right.
But I enjoy having food in my home, yes.
I'm trying to think. I was an Andy Frayn usher.
Okay. Really?
I did that for a little while.
That's fun.
Yeah. I got to see a lot of concerts.
Yeah.
That wasn't so bad. And then I worked in a factory. I worked, and you know what else I did, Roger? I worked, and my dad worked for a printing company, and I actually worked as like one of, they call them like the floor boys. I used to throw loads. They called it load, like you take the paper. That's what it was called, throwing loads. You would take the actual printed, you know, the giant sheets of paper that would come out of the printing press, and you'd have to flip them.
Right.
And you flip them over, and you get the air in there and everything. I did that for like 2 days. I think.
Two whole days?
Yeah, I think I did that for about 2 days. I did that for exactly 1 year. I started on April 1st, and I quit on April 1st.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
I worked at a health club. My dad owned a health club downtown here at the Riviera 400 Club. It's just down the street.
What did you
here.
Do at the health club?
I worked at the front desk.
Oh, you were like you're a little secretary.
No, not at all. I would chuck people in and hand them a towel and
check their cards,
flirt
right? Their
with
membership
the boys.
Cards.
You would give them a towel? Nice.
Yes, for the shower and for the health club. Yeah, it was a hard job. You know, somebody had to do it.
Sean, give me a couple of your jobs before WGN, Sean. What'd you have? A couple of.
My first job was for Amoco Corporation.
Okay. What'd you do there?
I basically was over the entire summer program payroll.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah.
So, yeah. Nice. I worked right down there off of Randolph.
Could have called you for a job, right?
Yeah. We all could have done that.
Yeah, what about after that?
After that, I worked at a publishing company called Urban Ministries.
Okay.
They do Sunday school books and things of that nature for churches.
Nice. What did you do there?
Telemarketing.
All right. Well, you
sales.
Know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What else? What other jobs? Did you have, Lisa?
Oh, well, I used to work at the Reading Center at University of Illinois Chicago.
Right.
Right.
Nice.
I taught a few classes at U of I.
Did you ever teach piano? Because you're a really good piano player. Did you ever teach piano?
I took piano lessons. I certainly didn't teach piano.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot
I'm
of
I'm trying
jobs.
To remember all the
I worked at a theater for 14 years. That's a long job
what?
For me.
Which theater?
In Northbrook
Theater.
Oh, right.
You did improv.
No, it was
right?
not improv.
What
it was
it?
Theater for Young Audiences.
Okay.
It's a professional equity theater for young audiences. I
well,
was there for 14
me.
Years.
Forgive me for saying improv.
It wasn't improv. I love improv, but that's not what it was.
Right.
14 years is a long long time.
Very long time.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, don't ask me which to, because I've never met a job I didn't like.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know,
seriously.
You know what I did one summer? Yeah. Actually, I'm trying to think. I was really young. I was probably 18 or 19 years old, and I was looking for a job, and I was looking in the newspaper, and there was a job for a fitness instructor for like a community thing. Like people signed up for a fitness class.
Right?
I had never taught a fitness class in my life.
Did you have to show some certification of some sort?
No. I went there for the apply for the job, and
they laughed at you?
No, and I thought I'm never going to get this job, right, Roger? I'm thinking right. I've never taught a fit. So they asked me, did you ever teach a fitness class? I said no. They said, did you ever do this? I'm like, no. Do you work out much? I said, well, yeah, I work out, but you know. And they said, okay. And I thought,
lifting a glass never going to. And
you're hired.
The next day they said, can you start Saturday? Yeah. The first class is, and it was all women. It was there was no men in the class, and they were all like older women, and I was like 18 years old, and I didn't know, I was completely lost.
That's the story
of my
life.
But you know what? I did it for the 13 weeks. I did 13 classes. Wow. I taught the classes. I kind of got some books out of the library and had like fitness for these ladies. And it ended up working out.
Not bad.
I think I got paid I think I got paid $100, which was a lot of money back then per class.
That's
it was
a
like
good
a,
job.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, I think it was $100.
That's a good job.
I remember
job.
Making $1,300 over that 13-week span.
I wish I could
And I was like,
that.
Wow, yeah, not bad.
Oh, yeah, hit you up for a loan.
Yeah. You and me both.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so those were the days, right,
yep,
Lisa?
I agree.
Those were the
I guess working at the Playboy Hotel, it can't match all that. I don't know.
The Playboy Mansion.
Playboy Mansion?
No, the hotel.
Oh, the
downtown.
Hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, downtown? Did
yeah.
you work there? What'd you do there?
I worked the front desk.
Wow.
There you go.
That's impressive. That wins.
During college.
That wins. Of all of the jobs
really?
Here. Yeah, that wins.
No.
Definitely. The Playboy Club.
Playboy Hotel, yeah.
Absolutely.
And club, well, you know.
No doubt.
It was a job.
Not bad. Not bad, Roger. I would like your autograph, please.
No, that's all right. Because then you just put it on a blank check, and then I got to pay it. You know, a lot of problems, though.
All right, coming up this hour on the WGN Radio Theater, it's a half an hour episode of Suspense, Murder Through the Looking Glass with Gregory Peck from 1949, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
For Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor will star as Gru and his long-lost brother, Drew, in the comedy Despicable Me 3. And the winner will win two tickets to see the play Chops. It's playing through August 14th at Theater Wit, which is on Belmont in Chicago.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You'll hear this actor in a scene from 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, yeah, right. God, I've been looking for that speed dating card. Thank you so much for bringing it to me.
312-981-7200. Give us a call if you know who that actor is. We'll find our winner after this break. All right, let's hear that movie clip again.
Oh, yeah, right. God, I've been looking for that speed dating card. Thank you so much for bringing it to me.
Oh, I just love that clip, and I just love that movie. Let's talk to Jacob from Valparaiso. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good.
Do you share my sentiment with that movie?
I do not like that movie.
Oh, get out of here. It just wasn't for you, huh?
No, it wasn't for me.
All right. Well, fair enough. But you know who that actor is?
I do.
Tell me.
Steve Carell.
You are right. Well, he's a great actor, even in that movie and all the other things. So congratulations. You've won a pair of tickets to see Chops. It's playing July 7th through August 14th at the Theater Wit, which is on Belmont in Chicago. And it's about three middle-aged jazz freaks who are charmed by a beautiful and mysterious woman. It's a world premiere. And for more information, you can check them out at theaterwit.org. Jacob, thanks so much for calling, and you'll have to check that movie out one more time just for me.
All right, I will.
Okay, take care.
All right, it's time for our third episode of Suspense, starring the one and only Gregory Peck. This is an episode called Murder Through the Looking Glass. It's from March 17th, 1949, part one now of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Gregory Peck in Michael Vanning's Murder Through the Looking Glass, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder. And now, Autolite presents Gregory Peck in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The sound was a dull, monotonous roar in my ears, and I listened, wondering if it were real or part of a dream. Suddenly, I was awake, and I knew that I was riding on a train. But where? I didn't remember getting on a train. I opened my eyes and saw that I was in the lounge car. There was only darkness through the window. A man sat across from me reading. It was a bridge game down the aisle. A porter serving drinks. Everything nice and normal. Except that I had no idea how I got on the train or why I was there. I tried to think of a reason for being there, but I couldn't. These spells of forgetfulness had been coming on more often lately. I leaned back and closed my eyes, listened to the rhythm of the train. A melody began to fit itself to the rhythm. I couldn't remember ever having heard such a song, but somehow I seemed to know the words. Down in the valley, valley so low, late in the evening, hear that train blow, hear that train blow.
I beg your pardon, sir, but your singing is disturbing the other passengers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You understand, sir, it's the other passengers. I kind of liked your singing myself.
Your singing didn't disturb me either, young man. In fact, it was rather a pretty melody. What was the name of it?
Why, it's, you know, it's silly, but I don't know. I can't even remember the tune now.
That's the way it is with songs. I've had the same thing happen to me.
So what train is this?
Why, it's the New York Express to Philadelphia. Ought to be there any minute, too. You must have been on some party if it lasted all day.
Or what time is it?
7 o'clock. P.M., that is. Yes, sir. It must have been pretty drunk out where you were.
I think he said something else after that, but I wasn't listening then. I noticed that I was wearing a brown top coat. It wasn't mine. Maybe I'd accidentally exchanged coats with someone. If I couldn't remember it, it must have been that kind of a party. If so, I felt for my wallet. It was there. I opened it to see if I had any money left, and my eye was caught by the driver's license, made out to John Blake. In another pocket of the wallet, there were engraved cards reading John Blake Insurance. I wasn't John Blake. I was Jeffrey Bruno, a writer. I couldn't even drive a car. I didn't know anything about insurance. I'd never heard of a John Blake, but here was his identification in my wallet. Right,
what's the matter, young fellow? Are you ill?
The man across from me said something, but I didn't hear what it was. I looked through the other pockets. There was a bank book showing that John Blake had a big bank balance of $647.55. My balance had never been higher than 15 bucks. There was a letter, a bill for shirts, addressed to John Blake at an address I never heard of before. There was a moment there, a few crazy seconds, when I wondered if I really was John Blake. No, I couldn't be. I knew I was Jeffrey Bruno, who lived at a two-room apartment in Greenwich Village and wrote mystery stories for a living. I knew who I was.
Broad Street Station. Broad Street Station.
Well, here we are. Or are you going on downtown?
Well, I could get a train back to New York here, couldn't I?
Sure, right across on the other platform. That must have been some party.
I had to get back to New York and straighten out this business about John Blake's coat and identification. He, whoever he was, might even be thinking I'd stolen them. Besides, I wanted to find out where I'd been the night before and all day, and why I'd awakened on a train to Philadelphia. And then just as I got up from the seat, I glanced out of the window. The newsboy was holding up a newspaper. Across the top was the big headline.
Killer Blake escaped!
Blake! And just below it, there was a picture of me. Pulling down my hat and turning up my coat collar, I managed to get on a New York train without anyone recognizing me. Then, fortunately, no one pays any attention to anyone else on New York subways. 2 blocks from my apartment house, I stopped at the corner stand to buy a newspaper.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Bruno. Haven't seen you around for a couple days.
Yeah, I've been busy.
Hey, you know, I saw your picture somewhere today. You got a story in one of the magazines, maybe?
No. Well, good.
Wait a minute. I'll remember where I saw your picture. I never forget
a thing. I've got to go now. You can tell me about it tomorrow. I had to get away before he remembered. I looked down and saw my picture on his papers. At home, there were a lot of letters in my box. Too many for just one delivery. When I got to the apartment, I looked at them. Two of the letters had been postmarked in New York 3 days before. It doesn't take 3 days for letters to be delivered locally. Where had I been for 3 days? Who's there?
Rosalie.
Oh, Rosalie, just a minute.
Hi, Jeff. I thought I heard someone in here. Oh, a friend of yours stopped by, but you weren't home. He ran into me on the stairs and asked if I lived here and then wanted me to give you a message. Burnett was his name. Bill, I think he said.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, Rosalie. Stay and talk to me. We can have some coffee or a drink. When did you say Bill was here?
Yesterday morning. He said something about having had a date with you the night before, but you never showed up.
Yesterday morning? Oh, yes.
What's the matter, Jeff? Don't you feel well?
Oh, sure. I feel fine. Rosalie, tell me, do I ever do anything out of the ordinary? I mean, have I ever seemed strange?
You mean, are you... Well, you've always seemed very sane to me, if that's what you mean. In spite of your vanishing acts.
My what?
The times you disappear. You don't know? I'm sorry.
Let me finish it for you. You mean the days when I've awakened thinking it was Tuesday, only to turn out to be Thursday. You mean I'd disappear for a couple of days, go somewhere else, become somebody else.
Oh, I wouldn't have said anything, Jeff, but...
Well, then why don't I remember? Now, I've heard of people drawing blanks because they've had too much to drink, but now maybe it's something different.
What is, Jeff?
Well, I told her all about it. All I knew, anyway. At first she was frightened, but then I guess she felt sorry for me and she got over it. Before Rosalie, had always been just a beautiful, desirable girl. I'd had drinks with her a few times in her apartment or mine, but that was all. Oh, not that I hadn't wanted to take her out, but she was a model, and I was sure that she led a glamorous life with rich men begging to take her out. But now she didn't look as glamorous as she looked understanding. I needed that, for I was beginning to believe that the explanation of John Blake wasn't as simple as I first thought.
I'm glad I came in, Jeff. You need someone. And it doesn't matter whether you're John Blake or not.
Well, it matters to me. I know I'm Jeffrey Bruno and not some guy named John Blake. Why, I can remember my whole life, living on the farm, going to school, working on a newspaper, coming to New York. I can remember every minute of it.
Every minute?
No, not every minute.
You know, Jeff, such things can happen. White-bearded old men with eyeglasses write books about such things. They've got a word for it. I can't pronounce it, but it means that you can be two people at one time and not know it. So maybe
I'm John Blake, too. I was way ahead of you in thinking that.
And if you are, that's a sickness. And people can get over being sick. Maybe you'll remember all the things John Blake did.
I already know one thing he did. He killed someone. I don't know who or how, but John Blake murdered someone.
You brought a paper home. Why not see? Whatever happened, Jeff, we'll find a way to work it out.
Thanks, Rosalie. Here it is. His name was Rufus Carrington. He was an old man and wealthy. I, John Blake, worked part-time for his nephew, Roger Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
There's money missing from the firm, and it's believed Rufus Carrington may have found out about it.
I see.
Roger Gunn arrived to see his uncle this morning and was told by the butler that the old man was in the study with an unknown caller. Roger Gunn was talking to the butler when they heard the old man cry out. He ran to the study and found him dead.
Oh, how awful.
The nephew saw me, the killer, escaping and recognized him. Well, if I were John Blake, my other self didn't do things in a small way.
Oh, don't, Jeff.
I never wanted the things John Blake must have wanted. I never wanted riches, never thought of going into a business like insurance. I just can't understand this thing.
They'll understand, Jeff. They have people who understand things like that.
Rosalie, whatever happens, will you promise me that if you don't like Jeffrey Bruno, you'll like John Blake? But like one of us. It doesn't matter which one it is.
I like you, whichever one of them you are.
You see, Rosalie, I'm innocent, even if John Blake isn't. I haven't murdered anyone.
It was another part of me, but if I try to run away, they'll find me, they'll hurt me for what John Blake did. Where can I go? What can I do?
You can go to the police and tell them the whole truth. Because, you see, they can't do anything to you. You're not responsible for what you did as John Blake.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're right. There's no point in running. Look, I know I have no right to ask it, but would you go with me, Rosalie?
Of course I will, Jeff.
It's like being haunted, knowing that somewhere inside of me there's another man, never knowing when I'll be him. Say, what if I turn into John Blake before we even get to the police?
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Gregory Peck in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
All right, let's take a break here on Suspense with Gregory Peck in Murder Through the Looking Glass. We'll have the conclusion after this break and the news, so stay with us.
Thank
yes,
you, Roger.
Sir. I like this. And I like that news.
And we like Roger.
I like you
I
guys.
Missed something. I was listening. Did the Cubs lose or did they win?
They lost.
They lost by one run?
Oh, gosh, no.
What did they lose
oh,
by?
Oh, yeah, actually, yes, they did.
I think
I'm,
they, what
I'm
they
thinking
lose?
Of the game from before.
Like
yeah,
that?
It was 4-3. I'm okay. thinking of the game from Friday.
You know, I'm a huge Cubs fan. You
yes.
know that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I've been noticing they've been losing some games lately.
Shh,
I mean,
don't
what's
say,
going
okay.
on here?
It's
what's,
all okay.
What's going on?
It's all okay.
Sean, you're
according
a Cubs
to Coach Madden,
fan?
It's all okay.
I'm a baseball fan.
Yeah, baseball. I love baseball.
They're fine.
Yeah. Listen, best Cubs team maybe of all time we have going on right now. Could be,
well,
right?
They still are the best team in the majors.
Yeah.
They have the highest percentage.
Wow. Okay.
Of one loss. So right. they're still up there.
Do
they're
you think
right.
they okay with their shortstop, or do they need me to go play shortstop for them?
Well, they've been calling. I don't know if you've gotten the
calls. I
could play
third, too, you know.
You could?
Yeah. Play third base. I'm a middle infielder.
All right.
So
you have range to your left and right.
You know,
there's a horse walking by.
I don't have the same arm as I had back in my.
Is that the one he wrote in on?
College
yeah.
playing days. But I'd be willing to step in at third or short or second for them.
Well, you know, you kind of have the same kind of build, the same style as Ron Say.
Yeah.
You know, we can
yeah.
put you at third. We
right.
call you a spark plug or what? What's your nickname?
You know, that guy, he was really good over there at
yeah,
third,
he was.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
He could just scoop anything, that
mm-hmm.
guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's fantastic
yeah.
over
very good
there.
Player.
Yeah, almost as good as Lisa Wolf over there at third base.
Yeah, I'm pretty athletic.
Can you imagine how good she would be with, give her a glove and
I would
her
run
third?
The other way, but other than yeah. that, I'd be great.
Baseball is the round ball.
Gotcha.
It's about that
hey,
big.
Hey, we went to a baseball game together not
yes,
too long
we
ago.
Did.
We
yes.
had a lot of fun.
We did, absolutely. And we were with Steve Trout.
Yes, we
you know
were.
You know that, Roger?
Look at
Lisa
you guys.
And I were
we
with,
did, and we...
thanks to Dan Jaffe.
Yeah.
Dan Jaffe
wow.
Invited us
and,
to Skybox.
And Wayne
Skybox.
Messmer. And,
Wayne Messmer.
And we had some
I know
fun.
Wayne from way back.
Yeah,
yeah
sure.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah, wait a minute. I didn't remember getting a phone call from you guys.
yeah, about that, Roger.
Here's what happened. Dan Jaffe, our sponsor at Oil Dry and Cat's Pride,
mm-hmm.
he had a box, the... a really
now
nice sky box.
Like yeah. to do it. Yeah.
That was something. And the food was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The
I'm
dessert.
All about
it's,
the food.
It's the dessert.
You know
it was
me,
the,
Lisa.
It was the dessert, Roger.
That dessert
it was,
tray. I've seen
it was
that
just,
dessert tray.
It was like the yeah. dessert tray at the Blackhawks game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's beyond.
Right.
Yeah.
If you say food, I'm there.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And they had food. And then they also had Steve Trout there.
Yeah, we
how
were
cool
hanging
was that?
So he's
guy.
Like an ambassador.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they
okay.
always have an ex-Cub.
Okay.
What
and
a nice man.
We got Cubs hats that he signed.
He signed our Cubs hats.
And yeah,
cool.
I hung out
very cool.
with Wayne for a while. And,
you know,
and
Wayne,
it was a lot of fun.
Wayne Messmer, mm-hmm. one of the nicest men
yeah,
you
great.
Ever want to meet
yeah,
in the whole
nice.
Wide
yeah.
world. And Steve
very
Trout,
talented.
Too.
Wow.
Yep, it was a lot of fun. All right, let's get back to this. This is Suspense going back to March 17th, 1949, Gregory Peck, the conclusion of Suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Gregory Peck as Jeffrey in Murder Through the Looking Glass, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Rosalie was right. I thought about it as we walked down the stairs. Well, they'd know what to do with a case like mine. They'd know that Jeffrey Bruno wasn't responsible for what John Blake did. Of course, they'd lock me up for my own good and then they'd leave me in there.
What's the matter, Jeff?
Wait, Rosalie. You're right. I mustn't run away, but first I've got to find out about the other me, about John Blake. All I know is that he murdered someone. I have to know other things about him, what he was really like.
I understand, Jeff, but you mustn't do anything foolish.
I have to know about my other life, what books I read, what kind of girls I liked. You can see that's important, can't you?
Of course. Jeff, I just thought of something. I know a man, a psychiatrist. Maybe if I called him, you could see him tonight. He'd understand. Maybe he could tell you what to do. Will you talk to him?
Well, I'll do anything. It'll help me to understand what I was like when I was John Blake and why I was like that.
I'll go in the drugstore here and call him. I'm sure he'll see you, and we'll do whatever he says.
Now, Mr. Bruno, you say there have been many times when you haven't remembered what happened for days.
Oh, not many. A few times. It only happened after I'd been drinking, and I thought that's all it was. Until this...
I see. It's a very interesting case.
Well, what is it, Doctor? I've done some reading on psychiatry, and it sounds... Is it split personality?
Schizophrenia? Yes, it's very possible. For instance, subconsciously, you might have had a desire for things which, consciously, you'd convinced yourself were bad. That desire became so great that you created John Blake so you could satisfy it without compromising Jeffrey Bruno.
Yeah, but wouldn't I be partly aware of wanting those things? Isn't it possible that I'm not John Blake, that all of this is something else?
I'll let you answer that yourself, Mr. Bruno.
How can I? If I could answer it, I wouldn't be here.
Mr. Bruno, do you honestly believe that there is a real person named John Blake, a person who looks exactly like you, a person whose coat and identification came accidentally into your possession?
No, I guess I don't, but there must be another explanation.
The alternative would be to believe that someone is framing you. Do you believe that someone drugged you several times so there'd be days you couldn't account for? That someone forged the papers of John Blake and planted them on you? Can you believe that someone planned to commit this murder months ago, rented an apartment in the name of John Blake, filled it with clothing in your size, put your photograph in the apartment?
No, but...
According to the newspaper story, the nephew of the murder victim was the only man to identify your picture. Therefore, he would have to have been the one to frame you. Well, this would imply that this Roger Gunn knew you and you knew him. Do you?
No, I don't remember. Well,
then can you believe that he was able to drug you to know your clothes size to get a photograph of you?
I guess
not. Besides, if he framed you, that implies he is the murderer. But that can't be, because according to the butler, the nephew was with him at the time the murder took place. You see, Mr. Bruno?
I see. Well, what can I do, Doctor?
Well, if this were not a murder case, the answer would be a simple one. I'd undertake to treat you, but... As it is, I'm afraid I must suggest that you go to the police.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
I'm sorry I wasn't able to help you, young man. If you'd only come to me sooner.
Jeff, can you help him, Doctor?
Under the circumstances, it's too late for me to do anything directly. I've advised Mr. Bruno to go to the police.
Come on, Jeff. I'll go with you.
All right. Well, thank you, Doctor.
Oh, not at all. Sorry, I can't do more. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. I'm sorry, Jeff, but they'll have to believe you. They can't make you suffer for what John Blake did. And then, when you're well...
When I'm well? What?
We'll see.
Rosalie, there's one more thing I want to do before I go to the police. I want to see the apartment where I lived when I was John Blake. I still don't know what I was like when I was being him. Maybe if I can only see how I lived, it'll give me a clue.
Jeff, right across the street.
The lobby looks empty. Now, let's see. The address on the letter is apartment 203.
Wasn't there anything in the letter?
It was a bill. It seems that I'm not only an embezzler and a murderer, but I didn't even pay John Blake's bills.
Please, Jeff, don't joke about it.
All right, Rosalie, no joking. I don't think it's very funny either. Now, if I were John Blake, I ought to have a key to my own apartment. Ah, this must be it. I don't remember ever seeing it before, but the number 203 is stamped on it. Well, Rosalie.
I'll stay here and warn you if the police come. Good luck, Jeff.
The lobby was empty. I got on the self-service elevator and I rode up to the second floor. It, too, was deserted, and I walked to the door of my apartment. I hesitated, wondering if maybe there were a policeman inside. Well, I had to take the chance. A key worked, and I stepped inside. The place seemed empty. I turned on the light. It was a small apartment, inexpensive, perfectly correct, and dull. There were hunting prints on the wall. There were two suits in the wardrobe. My size all right, even though I couldn't remember buying them. There were even monogrammed handkerchiefs. It was unreal. Yet I had to believe all these things belonged to me, that there had been times when I liked wearing them. My head was spinning by now, and I leaned up against the wall. I don't know how long I stood there, unaware of anything except the pain inside. Gradually, I was aware that somebody was knocking on a door, but it was several seconds before I located it. It was at my door. The police? Oh, no, Rosalie said she'd warn me.
Open up in there. This is an emergency.
It was the police. I wasn't ready to give myself up yet. I ran to the window. There was a fire escape outside.
Open up or we'll break it down.
I raised the window and looked out. I couldn't see anyone.
Let's go in.
I could take a chance that there wasn't a cop at the bottom of the fire escape. I climbed out and closed the window. As I started to break in, I ran down the fire escape. I jumped to the ground and looked around the corner. There was one man sitting in the police car. I turned and ran the other way. I must have run two blocks before I heard footsteps behind me. I turned and it was Rosalie.
Oh, Jeff.
You said you'd warned me. What happened?
But I did, Jeff. I rang the buzzer twice while they were getting out of the car. When I saw you getting away, I thought you'd heard. You must have heard it.
You rang twice? The bell must be out of order, just like John Blake. Or I didn't hear it. I almost didn't hear them knocking. I'm sorry, Rosalie. I don't know.
It doesn't matter, Jeff. I was so frightened.
Oh, you mustn't be. I promise I won't do anything to involve you or hurt you.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of myself. You can't go on like this, Jeff. You've got to go in. Give yourself a chance to get well.
I know. You know, upstairs there for a minute, I thought of running away, of going to some little town and changing my name. But that's no good either. That wouldn't get rid of John Blake.
Then?
I've got an idea. Just one more try. Another hour won't make any difference to the police.
All right, Jeff. Where are we going?
Not we, Rosalie. I'm not going to involve you in this anymore. I was John Blake. I did the things John Blake did, and I have to see it through to the finish.
At least tell me where you're going.
No, it'll be better if you don't know.
Oh, please, Jeff.
No, this is the way it has to be. Then if it turns out worse than we think, you can just remember that for a few hours you were friendly to someone who needed it. If I come through this, if I get well, then...
Yes, Jeff?
Well, as you said, Rosalie, we'll see. I put her in a cab and gave the driver the address in the village. Then I went to the place where I was afraid to go. Yet it was the one place I had to go.
Yes, sir?
Well, aren't you Mr. Carrington's butler?
Yes, sir. Clark is the name, sir. I was in Mr. Carrington's service for 40 years. But why do you ask?
Well, don't you recognize me?
I don't believe so, sir. Of course, there were so many of you here today from the newspapers.
But I was here even earlier. I'm John Blake.
Oh, then you're the gentleman who murdered Mr. Carrington, according to the newspapers.
Well, why do you say according to the newspapers?
I don't believe you killed Mr. Carrington, sir.
You don't? Why not?
Why, he didn't even know you, sir.
Well, maybe he only got acquainted with me this morning when I came to kill him.
If he had made an appointment with you, sir, I would have known.
But didn't you let me in to see him?
Oh, no, sir. He answered the door himself when his visitor arrived.
I see. Is Mr. Carrington's nephew here?
Mr. Gunn? Yes, sir. But he left word not to be disturbed.
He did he? Clark, did Mr. Carrington have a gun?
Yes, sir.
Would you trust me with it if it might help catch the murderer? I guarantee it'll catch him.
Won't you step in?
Thank you.
I was very fond of Mr. Carrington, sir. He kept the gun here in the hall near the door. Oh, here it is, sir. I'm an old man myself, and perhaps I'm foolish to even...
Now don't you worry. Just take me to see Mr. Gunn.
Oh, but I can't do that, sir.
Clark!
Oh, pardon me, sir. Yes, Mr. Gunn?
Who are you talking to, Clark? Is that the attorney?
No, sir. It's a young...
Wait a minute. I know that voice. I'm sorry, Clark.
Who the devil... You?
Yes, me, Mr. Gunn, or should I say Dr. Gunn?
Clark, leave the room.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is all a terrible mistake.
You bet it is. And I want to hear why the nephew of the man I'm supposed to have murdered is also the psychiatrist who convinced me I was crazy and ought to surrender to the police.
Well,
don't move.
Don't point that gun at me, please. I'm expecting a phone call from the attorney about the will. And then I'm sure we can straighten this thing out. I'll give you money.
We'll straighten it out now without money. You killed your uncle, didn't you?
No. I was with Clark. He can tell you.
Don't answer that.
Clark will answer it then, on the extension. And he knows I'm
here. Let Clark answer it. But I'm going to get the truth out of you before you have a chance to talk to anyone.
I meant you no harm.
Not much. You just wanted me to take your seat in the electric chair. You told me the whole thing when you were posing as the psychiatrist, didn't you? You told me the truth, making me think it couldn't have been like that. The only thing you didn't tell me was about the person who killed your uncle and helped frame me.
I beg your pardon, sir, but it's an urgent call.
Don't move, Gunn. If it's so urgent, I'll take it for you. Yes?
Roger, I'm calling you from our usual place. He hasn't gone to the police yet. Roger, are you there?
I can't talk now. The attorney's here.
Wait, Roger. I think he's on his way over there. Be careful.
All right.
You don't sound right. Are you getting frightened again? After all we've done so far, you've got to keep your nerve up. I'm coming over, Roger.
Good.
I'll be there in 5 minutes. Stall him when he arrives. Goodbye, Roger.
Goodbye, Rosalie. Clark.
Yes, sir?
You were right before. Mr. Carrington opened the door this morning for a beautiful young lady after a date had been made by Mr. Roger Gunn here.
I told him she was blackmailing me, and I wanted him to see her because he'd had experience handling that sort of thing. But I swear Rosalie didn't tell me she was going
Never
to kill...
Never mind. Clark, call the police. Tell them by the time they arrive, the murderer of Mr. Carrington will be here waiting for them.
Thank you, Gregory Peck, for a great suspense show. Say, Greg, while out driving one Sunday afternoon recently, I heard you on the Family Hour of Stars.
Busman's holiday.
Yes, and I was thinking then how you always give a splendid performance.
Well, as usual, it's been great fun to do a suspense play. It's one of the programs that every actor in Hollywood most enjoys to appear on and to listen to. For instance, I wouldn't miss next week's show when Pat O'Brien stars in a really outstanding story, Dead Earnest. Another gripping study in...
Suspense.
Gregory Peck can currently be seen starring in the 20th Century Fox production, Yellow Sky. Tonight's suspense story was by Michael Venning, whose books have also been written under the more familiar name of Craig Rice. The adaptation for radio was by Ken Crossan. Music was composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. Next Thursday, same time, hear Pat O'Brien in Dead Earnest.
Buy Autolite electrical parts, Autolite resistor spark plugs, Autolite stay-full batteries at your neighborhood Autolite dealer. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
We have the highest standard of living in the world. Safeguard the American way. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, hope you enjoyed that. Suspense with Murder Through the Looking Glass, sponsored by Autolite, starring Gregory Peck. Also in the cast, they're Ed Begley, William Johnstone, Joseph Kern, Sidney Miller. That was Paul Frees announcing Harlow Wilcox at the end there. And we talked about this. Nobody names their kids Harlow anymore. Also, Lud Gluskin was the conductor. Lud. And yeah, know anybody named Lud?
I'm sure I'd pick Harlow over Lud.
And what about Lucian? Lucian Morowick.
No.
Ever heard of him? Did you ever grow up with a Lucian? I never did.
No. You know and somebody?
So there's a Harlow on here. There's a Lucian.
Lucian?
Had a friend in high school named Lucian. Lucian really? Watson. Yeah.
Lucian Watson.
L-U-C-I-E-N.
That's
what
actually
about,
a cool name.
What
Lucian
about
Watson.
Lud? Know anybody named Lud?
Sounds
never.
Like Dud.
L-U-E-D. L-U-D. Lud.
Sounds like Dud.
Hi, my name is Lud. How you
dog.
Doing?
It's probably short for something.
Ludwig.
There
yeah,
you
like
go.
Van Beethoven.
Yeah.
Ludwig. Ludwig yeah. von Beethoven. Yeah. That's right. Has to, see, yeah. that's why she's got the two brains.
Right? All that
she's
school,
got the degree,
and I've got
we
it.
Don't.
Oh, my
But
gosh.
Then you would have to say he's lewd.
Yeah, lewd.
He's lewd.
Oh, he goes by
well,
Lud.
Well, he went Lud, so I went with Ludwig. But
Lud Gluskin.
Ludwig von. It depends on the accent.
Imagine
again,
if a guy was dating, you know, you were dating a guy named Lud Gluskin, and he said, would you like to marry me? You'd be Lisa Gluskin. Gluskin. What do you think,
yeah,
Lisa?
I'd have to learn how to say it first.
Well, Lisa Gluskin. That's not bad. It's not too bad.
It works.
All right. Well,
is
it, anyway.
Is he good looking?
Oh, yeah, very good.
Okay, then I'm
very
okay.
Good.
Does he have money?
Then I'm good.
Does he have money?
Hey, I'm trying to be
well, he was
nicer.
A conductor on Suspense. I'm sure they paid him pretty good. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.